Tracking Santa, of course. Now he's on his way to Salt Lake City. This guy's all over the map. He really is. Talking about miracle stories here and another hour to go. You'll always remember this story, of course, of the guy who called our program many, many years ago. And he was out swimming in the ocean. And he had gotten a little too far. And he realized he can't swim back. And he was going under, folks. He was a goner. And while he was underwater, he sees a hand burst through the top of the water right down into him. And he grabs it, and the hand pulls him up. And he comes up gasping for air, and the people who were on shore saw him go under, and they were swimming out to save him. But they were like 100 yards away from him. But somebody saved him. So while he gets his composure, he turns to thank the person who pulled him out of the water, literally, and there's nobody there. Nobody there. The people who had seen this on shore, who were swimming towards him, all they saw was him pop up out of the water. Unbelievable. Great story. Anyways, we'll take your miracle calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, and Merry Christmas to you too, Catherine, and thank you for so many wonderful programs with you and economic advice for everybody. I truly appreciate it. Okay, let's go now to Peter in Orlando, Florida, east of the Rockies. Let's get this hour started. Pete, go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing? Merry Christmas.
You too, Peter. Thank you.
I wanted to start my story because I have a St. Louis connection. My family goes back in Missouri back to the late 1900s. Starting with my fourth great-grandfather, Joseph Robidoux.
Okay.
And my grandmother, try to get my bearings here. My grandmother died in 1975, and I can remember my mother would take us out to St. Louis during the summers, and we would visit. And during those times, she had a makeup desk, a dresser, and an old secretary desk that I can remember my mother saying as a little girl back in the 1920s, she remembered sitting there watching my grandmother get dressed, get ready for a night out under the town. And I just kind of always in my mind wanted those pieces of furniture as I grew up.
Yeah.
My grandmother died in 1975, and she was buried in Bell Fountain Cemetery. And as the years went on and I grew up, when I got married, my mother gave me the furniture. After my grandmother passed away, the furniture passed on to me. And I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous here, but...
Oh, no, you're doing great.
When I got married, my wife and I, we bought our first home, and we put that furniture, we put the makeup desk, the dresser, and the secretary desk in the room that we were going to eventually make the nursery for our baby as we went about our lives.
Okay.
And during the holidays, I worked a lot. I was an executive chef at the time. And during Christmas, all through December, I was always at work. This would have been December 1994, Christmas Eve. I worked about a 14-hour day getting ready for the Christmas buffet. I came home. My in-laws were there. Went to bed. Woke up in the morning. Went to work on Christmas Day. And came home at the end of the day, again on Christmas Day, with my wife and my in-laws. We all opened up the gifts and kind of, did our Christmas thing. At the end of the day, before I went to bed, I walked into this room, and I sat down at the makeup desk that my grandmother had. And all of a sudden, it kind of clicked to me. I went, oh, wow. And I said, happy birthday, Grandma, because my grandmother was born on Christmas Day. At that very moment in time, I felt this brush of wind come through my back and kind of just go through the back of my body into the front and through the desk. It put the hair on the back of my neck up. And I just kind of felt really, it was a good feeling. It was just a very, it's only happened once in my entire life. It was just this really ominous feeling. And I guess to make a long kind of confusing story short, a month and a half later, my wife was pregnant.
Ah, how about that?
So, and I don't know why. I had this story all set out how I was going to tell you, and then the minute I heard your voice, I just kind of lost it.
But that was the gist of it. All right, my friend. Thanks. You have a great Christmas, you and your family.
You too. Thank you.
All right. You're very welcome. Jim, first-time caller, Gainesville, Florida. Welcome to the show, Jim. Go ahead.
Merry Christmas, George. Thanks for another good show.
You too, Jim. Thank you.
I was an infantry squad leader in Vietnam in 1968. And up to that point, I had a good background in science in school, and I thought I knew what was possible and what wasn't, and they were really strict, you know, universal laws about what could happen and what wasn't. And in the field, you have to understand what's going on all the time to know to have the correct response to everything, keep your people alive. One afternoon, we were ambushed, and this happened about once a week where we were, and we would normally just pull back from the area where the ambush was. Nobody got hurt that time, and we pulled back far enough that we could call artillery fire into that area before we went back into it. So we laid down on the ground so that any of the shrapnel would go over us. And I was thinking, this is all right. Nobody got hurt in the ambush, and we'll just lay here and have a rest for a while.
Yeah.
It was a nice afternoon. I looked up. There was a little opening in the trees above me. It was a sunny day. And I thought, I'll just rest. And somebody said, you need to move. And I looked around, and there wasn't anybody around me within 15 yards. And I thought, well, I hope my mind is okay, because I can't see anybody here. And I know scientifically that if you can't see somebody, there's nothing there to vibrate the air and make a sound. So there couldn't be a sound if there's nobody there. And if there's nobody there, if there's somebody there, I can see them. So I can't see them, so they're not there. So what's going on?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'm losing it a little bit. Or maybe if I imagine something, I hope it doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
And he said, again, you need to move. And this time I was paying attention. I knew exactly. It was oriented. I could tell exactly where he was, about 2 feet in front of me and to my right, but he wasn't visible.
He wasn't, but it was so vivid. You could really hear it, right?
It was absolutely unmistakable this time because I was paying attention. It was just like you and me talking now. It was a plain voice. It wasn't a thought or anything. It was an audible voice.
Yeah.
But he wasn't visible, so I keep telling myself, this is a contradiction in the natural laws. If it can generate sound waves, it has to be there. And if it's there, I can see it, but I can't see it. So it's violating the natural laws. So I finally concluded, okay, it's not natural, so it's got to be supernatural. So what do I know about the supernatural? The only thing I could think of is there's some good supernatural beings and some bad supernatural beings. And I don't know anything about this one except that he wants me to move. It doesn't make any sense because all the ground around me is just like where I am, and he's invisible. I'm thinking, okay, if it's a bad one, should I do what he says? Maybe I'm being set up. If it's a good one, maybe I should. And I'm thinking, I'm going to wait and get more information.
Uh-huh.
And then a fear came into my heart, just a feeling, a strong dread that something bad was going to happen. And I'm thinking, I'm real familiar with fear in the war. Okay, if there's no cause for this fear, then I don't need to be afraid. So it'll go away. And it got stronger and stronger and stronger, this dread that something bad was going to happen. And I thought, okay, he's doing this. Whoever he is, he's invisible, and he's changing my thoughts and feelings in my mind. And I thought, wow, this is an extremely powerful being, whoever this is. I don't know anything about these powers. All my knowledge of science doesn't mean anything. It doesn't apply here at all. I'm dealing with something that is completely new to me, and I'm completely ignorant. I looked under me, I looked down, and the ground under me was red. A perfect oval, like it had been stenciled around my body, was blood red. And I noticed it was a color between arterial bright red and dark venous, so it would be a mixture of arterial and venous blood, somebody that had a deep, serious wound. And I thought, why am I thinking blood? Oh, this is, the ground is just red. I'm not going to jump to conclusions. I got to try to understand this. But then I realized he did this too. He can change the nature of the material around me.
Of course.
Change my thoughts, and he's invisible. This is somebody I can't deal with. And then he said, you need to move now. And there was urgency brought into it, so I had to make a decision.
And how much time? How much time was going?
Just less than 3 minutes.
3 minutes for all this.
Very short. Because something was going to happen that I had no clue about. And he got there in time to persuade me. He didn't tell me to move. He said, you need to move. And then he told me, you need to move now. And I realized I have to make a decision. So I thought, okay, what are the consequences? If I move, what do you mean move? What if I just move over like 2 feet? That'll be moving, and that'll do what he wants. And I don't see how that could do any harm. And if I don't move, I've got this feeling that something's going to happen. I know something's going to happen anyway. So I just lifted up and moved over about 2 feet to the right and let myself back down. And the fear went out of my heart, and the redness disappeared from the ground, and it was quiet. And now I'm really confused because, you know, what is all the meaning of this?
Yeah.
Nothing that happened makes any sense.
And the voice went away? The voice went away, or did it come back?
Didn't say anything else. Then I heard a sound, a tearing sound in the sky, like a mortar round coming down, like the sound you hear when a jet plane flies by.
Oh.
Something was coming down out of the sky very fast. And it got louder and louder very fast, which means it's coming in a line towards me instead of off to the side. So I just got down as low as I could, and I heard a loud thud to my left. It sounded like somebody fell out of a tree, and the tearing sound stopped, and I looked to my left, and there was something black stuck in the ground where I'd been.
Oh.
About 8 inches out of the ground, had jagged edges, was slightly rounded and straight on the long axis, looked like it had been torn out of a cylinder, and I realized it was part of one of artillery rounds that exploded in the distance, had gone up very high and then come down through that opening in the trees without hitting a tree, and the sound was it stuck in the ground. And then I realized I would have been there.
That
it would
you.
Have been through my spine and just below my heart, and the ground would have been red with all my blood that I would have lost.
Saved
and I realized
you.
Whoever he was, he knew that was going to happen before it happened.
Yeah.
And got there in time to persuade me. He didn't make me move. He persuaded me to move. So he was invisible. He can change the color of the ground. He can change the thoughts, my thoughts and feelings, and he can see the future. I was thinking, how can anybody predict where that shrapnel, the artillery round comes through the artillery miles away, through the atmosphere, different pressures, different wind currents, hits the ground, explodes, another piece comes off with another trajectory, and hits right where I was.
Exactly.
And somebody knew. There's no scientific way to predict that.
Well, you know who won. You know who did it, Jim. That was an angel. It had to be. That saved you. And you're here to tell us that story today. That is definitely one of those miracles. Let's take another call. Ray in Temperance, Michigan. Welcome to the program. Ray,
yes,
thank you for
George.
Calling. Hi.
Yeah, I've got this story. I was laying here a little after 3 o'clock in the morning, and I said, boy, I'd like to share this story of my friend Ron Earls that was killed in a car wreck. He went to heaven and came back, and then you were having the miracle show, so I thought this would be a good time to do it.
Yeah, what happened? What happened?
Well, what it was, he was on a business trip to Columbus, Ohio. He woke up on a Saturday morning with him and a friend to a business trip. It had rained earlier that morning and so the roads were real slick as they got closer to Columbus. In a process in a series of events happened, and that another person's car went out of control, struck their car, and their car was hit with 6 different cars. It broke every piece of glass in the car, bent every piece of metal in the car, and they had to take my friend out with the jaws of life. And so he ended up in the hospital in Columbus, Ohio, and when I heard his story, I was in church at the time. I said, this is a fascinating story. So I recorded him and his wife, what they were going through. And so his wife received a phone call that her husband had been in a car wreck. Okay, and so she took her kids upstairs and said, dear Lord, please don't let him go. His family still needs them. And so she left her kids with some friends, and then she drove to Columbus, not knowing exactly what condition her husband was in at the time. And that, so in the process of time, that he had a friend with him, a partner with him in the car at the same time too. And in his story, he began to share that he was in a different place. He was in this place that he felt like he was like a kid all over. It was an exhilarating feeling. He said it was the most wonderful feeling that he ever felt with in his life. And that in the time that he looked up, and then there somebody had left the room that was dressed in white apparel. And then he heard a voice say to him, "You need to go back. Your family still needs you."
Yeah.
That was the same prayer that his wife had prayed. You need to go back. Your family still needs you. He turned around and he looked at his partner and said, it's time for us to go. But his partner said it wasn't for him. The next thing he realized that he had woke up on the gurney in the emergency room. And this is what he said, that he could hear the surgical teams were still inside the emergency room talking. He could hear them talking and what they were discussing, what was the cause of death, to put on the death certificate.
Oh.
And then he said, something, and they all turned and ran to them, and then the monitors started flashing again. And when he went in, with the head injuries, internal injuries, broken neck, broken collarbone, and a blown out knee. And when he came back, and that they had to MRI him again because all those things were gone.
Gone? Like perfectly gone?
Yeah, he was healed. The only thing that he had was the blown out knee, the head injuries, the That's broken amazing. Neck, the internal head injuries, and the internal injuries were all gone. So that was his story, and that, you know, that he said that heaven was a wonderful place, you know.
Let me ask you, Ray, his life since, is he still alive today now?
Oh, yes.
Has he done anything that would warrant, you know, them sending him back? Did anything unusual happen with his life?
He's a minister today at a church in Dundee, Michigan. He just goes around sharing with people that he's a Christian and a spirit-filled Christian, and that he gives a lot of assurances for people that have lost loved ones.
Yeah. Well, see,
that there's hope at the end of this life.
Yeah, there it is. Dundee's near... Is it near Lansing or near Flint?
Dundee is down by Monroe, Michigan.
Oh, that's right. It's closer to Toledo, right?
Exactly, yeah. And in fact, I recorded his story about 3 years ago on that, and I've passed out hundreds of copies of this CD that I have just so people can hear this story. And I'm amazed at how many people have received reassurance from his story that have lost loved ones, maybe prematurely or at some point in time in their life, and that, and they were comforted by the fact that there was hope at the end of this life.
That's a great story.
Yeah, and his story is recorded in a book today called Miracles Are Real, by a guy by the name of Keith Wall. Was writing a book about miracles, people that have had those experiences, and so he had all those physical things that happened to him, and he came back healthy.
I believe all that. And Ray, thanks for sharing that with us. Have a great Christmas.
You too.
Okay. Absolutely. And, you know, the clock is now ticking for Christmas morning, by the way. So, you know, here we are in St. Louis. It's 3:27 in the morning. In a couple hours, little kids will be jumping for joy, waking up. Oh, boy. And then I generally, you know, we just do what we do for the show. We just want to have as many people to come by and enjoy themselves. If they have family, great. If they don't, they're all more welcome to come over. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back with final open lines this Christmas Eve. But don't fret, because we're going to have a live program for you on Christmas night as well. Who's Behind the Secret Door? Plus the first hour guest, Raymond Moody, joins us talking about the dead in Christmas. So, we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Al Insurance, and welcome back to Coast AM. Great songs, huh? Hey, so on our next Coast to Coast program, as I just mentioned, Raymond Moody, our first hour, talking about the dead in Christmas. That'll be interesting. And then Who's Behind the Secret Door? A number of guests, six of them. I have no idea who they are. We'll do that. And then on our Thursday program, it'll be a split show for you here on Coast to Coast AM. So we'll be back in a moment, and we'll take final calls. Don't go away. Peter brings us great information, doesn't he? Wanted to read one email, Ed. And again, this strikes home. This is why we do live programs on holidays. Most, if not all, talk shows are running tapes, or the hosts are with their families, which is fine. But we think we have an obligation to you. But I want to read this from Steve. I'm not going to give his last name. Just says, when he thanks me, by the way, he's thanking all of us here at Coast to Coast, just so you know. I wanted to thank you, George, for being with me tonight over the airwaves. I have no one left in my immediate family. Since 1997, your show has helped keep my spirits at a relatively high plateau during these Christmas seasons. The time when many memories flow,
the time of loneliness that has been checked by your voice and spiritual presence. Thank you. Thank you. And that's from Steve. That's why we do it. That's exactly why we do it. Okay, let's go to the phones and let's go to Anonymous. He's to the Rockies in an anonymous area. Hello there, Anonymous. Why are we anonymous?
Are you speaking to me?
I'm speaking to Anonymous, whoever that might
be. Okay, well, good morning and Merry Christmas. Okay.
You too.
I didn't know there were more than one of us out there.
Why are you anonymous?
Well, I'm from a very small town with a very, and I've got a different name, and not
everybody
needs to know my history.
All right. That's fair enough.
I don't want everybody to say, oh, I didn't know that happened to you, because what happened was December 22nd of 77, my father was killed. He was a truck driver, and he was killed in a semi-accident. And since that time, we've always wondered, because it was out of state, we've always wondered, you know, how was he at the end? Was everything okay with him, you know? And that probably 15 years ago, I was driving to work, you know, it was 22nd of December, the anniversary of his death, and wondering, was everything okay with him at the end? And I was almost to work, and then suddenly my car, it smelled like how he smelled after he'd get out of the shower when he come off the road.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, okay, thanks. Everything was okay. That was a miracle to us because it does your heart good when you wander.
It warms the heart. It really does. You know, a lot of people talk about grandmother's flowers, and you could smell them in a room or something like that. And that does happen. I'll always remember the truck driver miracle call we had a couple of years ago where he was dozing off while he was driving at night. And he woke up as he was going, almost going over the cliff, to see a hand on his wheel pulling him back to the right and pulling him back onto the road. And he said, George, there was nobody else in the cab. It was just me. You know what? That's a miracle, too. Let's go to Matt in International Falls, Minnesota. Hey, Matt, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you doing tonight?
Great. How about you?
Not too bad. Just wanted to wish everybody out there happy holidays, and it's pretty cold up here.
Oh, yeah. It's cold here in St. Louis, too. It's about, I think it's like 12 degrees right now out there.
Yeah, it's about 10 above here.
That's typical for International Falls, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm a first-time caller, actually, but kind of the nerves here. But, yeah, anyhow, I was just going to just share something just briefly with the audience.
A miracle?
Yeah, you could say a miracle.
Okay, what happened?
3 years ago, it was around the time of the holidays. I was at a funeral, actually. And this is the people that, if they don't believe in any kind of spiritual reincarnation or anything, maybe after this they might. As I sat there, a neighbor lady, I seen as they were closing the ceremony, I was looking up by the picture, she was reincarnated, and I saw an orb go right from the where her urn was in the picture and everything, right up to the church and right through the ceiling.
I like that.
And, It was just unbelievable, incredible.
What do you think is the reason behind stuff like that?
Pardon me?
Why do you think people have these miracles occur like that?
I don't know. Maybe to show people that there are afterlife.
Yeah.
Things are, you know, things happen for a reason.
And, it's almost as if they want that kind of exposure They want people to know about it. They want people to talk about it, like even a program like this. And they just want people to believe. You know, that's probably what it comes down to. Let's go to next up, Shingletown, California. Roger's with us. Hey, Rog, Merry Christmas to you.
Hey, Merry Christmas, George.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I'm calling with the miracle of my life.
What happened?
Well, I wouldn't be here if it hadn't happened. I was working in Alaska at the time in the medical field, and I was weathered into a village in Elam, a small village outside of Nome. And it was in there for about a week. There was a big storm, and the first plane that arrived, I hopped on it and got back to. We were on our way back to Nome, and it was just me and the pilot. And he asked me, "You want to go up to Shishmaref?" And I'm going, "No, I really have to get back to Nome because I got to get this paperwork done." And so we went to Nome, and he picked up another fare on it on the plane, and I got off. And it was an 8-year-old kid who got on the plane with him. And then I left and went back to my office on Front Street. And about 10 minutes, I heard all the sirens in town going off. And I went down, and somebody said the plane had crashed. And that same plane that I'd been on got in some fog and hit a radio tower, and both of those people were killed. And had I said, "Okay, I'll go to Sish with you," I would have been killed too. Mm-hmm. And I got off that plane, and I'm alive now for it.
A sad miracle, you know?
Yeah, it was really sad. I followed the, you know, when they took the coffin to the plane to take him back to the 48, he was originally from San Diego, and I was there when they loaded the coffin and stuff. He was a friend of mine. It's something I'll never forget.
Jeez. Well, I'm glad you're around. Very sad for the two who are out there. Let's go east. Paula in Rochester, New York. Hi, Paula. Welcome to
the
program. Hi.
Merry Christmas. I love your show.
You too, Paula. Thank you.
Thank you. I was just thinking, it was actually a year ago tonight that my dad had gone into the hospital. He was 87. And he wasn't really too sick at the time, but he ended up getting out a few days later. Then he went back in about another week later, and he had fallen. So he went into rehabilitation for 2 days and ended up going home. But he was just not feeling himself. But he was saying he was ready to go. And he wasn't living with me. But I was in my room on a Friday night in my bedroom just doing something with my hair in my get-ready room. And I had a music box of my grandmother's, my father's mother. And all of a sudden it started playing. It was one of the wind-up with a key. And I never had the key. I had never heard it ever play music. I had my grandmother's things in it, and it started playing. And I remember looking at the clock. It was 1:18, and I just said, "That's weird." And I just remember the time. The next morning, we got a call, my brother and I, that my dad had passed away sometime the night before, between 1 and 1:30 in the morning.
Oh, my.
So it was like, sure, it was 1:18 because it was almost like a sign from him that he was gone and he was fine. So it was sort of interesting.
Oh, it sure is. Hey, thank you for that story. Thanks for sharing that. Santa, of course, now over Portland, Oregon, doing what he's doing. And you better pick up the pace a little bit. The sun will start coming up in a couple hours. So we don't want to do that. Let's go to Moab, Utah. James is with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, James. Go ahead.
Hey, George.
Best to you.
Merry Christmas. It's
thank you.
Good to be on your show with you.
You're all ready for Christmas? You better be.
Oh, man, I work graveyards out in the desert by myself, and this is the first year my son, that I get to miss Christmas with my son for his first year, so it's...
Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to just share a story. I was in an accident when I was younger where I was thrown from the back of a pickup truck and received a whole bunch of different types of damage. Spinal fluid leaked out of my ears, lots of blood, lots of things. I was put in a coma. And while I was in the hospital, I had an interesting thing happen with that. I was told about a woman who had been in my room, and nobody knew who she was. All these weird things. She basically came up to my mom and told her that she was here to tell my mom that I was a miracle. And what I'm getting at is, you know, I've battled with this a lot, and it's been a really hard thing for me to deal with in a lot of ways, for a lot of reasons. But I've learned a lot from it, and I would just like to say that, you know, especially for like some of your younger listeners, there are so many things in life that can bring you down and just constantly beat down on you, but there's always something that you can find good in life and continue to go forward, no matter how hard it is. There's a reason for everything. There's a reason why we're all doing these things, why you have this radio show, why I'm talking right now. Every little thing counts, you know, and it's just so many blessings in this world.
That's so true, James. You know, I'm still trying to figure out the sole purpose of life. And, you know, I know a lot of people will say it's to get perfected, it's to go off to that higher plane, but, I mean, there's got to be something else out there, too. There really is. Well, you enjoy Christmas, okay?
You too. Thanks, George.
Okay, absolutely. And in about a minute, I'm going to bring in Lionel Fanthorpe to give us his rendition. It's tradition. We do a lot of traditional things here on Coast to Coast. 'Twas the night before Christmas. But I do want to tell you, those of you who live in the greater Cleveland area or Ohio or those surrounding states, May 2nd, Shawshank Live. Here's the website, shawshanklive.com. That's right. This is where they did the movie, The Shawshank Redemption. And we're going to be at the Mansfield Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio on May 2nd. I'm going to be doing Coast to Coast out there from a prison. Yikes. We're going to do a ghost tour and everything else. So come on out there and spend some time with us. It's going to be fun. The events are starting up right after the first of the year, and we're going to be hot and heavy doing all of those. So definitely come out. And if you need information, you go to my calendar. You simply click hosts at the top of the coasttocoastam.com homepage. And then the calendar section opens up after you click hosts. And then just follow along, and you'll see where I am. Now, Lionel Fanthorpe's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
"'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When, out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When, what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer? With a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away, all! As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof, As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowlful of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger outside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Nobody does it like Lionel Fanthor. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition, our Christmas Day night show. Until then, be safe, everybody.